Welcome into the Lake Show. News Talk 830 WCCO. The longer that you live, the more history you will make. The more history that you will acknowledge, be a part of over the course of time. And there are certain dates that I think always stand out with each individual in their lifetime. There's certain dates that stand out. And I know that as an adult, a date that will stand out for me, clearly, is September 11th, 2001. You think about that date, the significance, where you were when the terrorist attack happened, especially with the timing of the Twin Towers in New York City. I'll never forget that. As an adult, that stands out to me. But as a young kid, there's a date that stands out to me. And I want to pick up where, and I had no idea he was going to talk about this at all, but where Jason DeRusher just left off. Because as a young kid, I remember where I was on January 28th, 1986. I remember that because of the Space Challenger exploding and that disaster that took place. I will never, ever forget that. I was in a classroom. And you know how, like, you have those situations where you get super excited and pumped up with your friends, with your classmates, when the teacher is rolling in the cart with the big box TV on top of it. You're ready. You're just chomping at the bit. You're like, we don't have to talk about anything with math right now. We can just dive into watching TV, right? So whenever you saw that cart getting wheeled into your classroom, you get excited. And we were all excited in that moment. I still remember that moment. And when the shuttle Challenger exploded, just kind of looking at my classmates, and we're like, what just happened? Right? And look, I remember my teacher that day, Mr. Sudo. I called my teacher, who just retired. He retired from teaching this past June. I called him less than an hour ago and talked to him about that specific day. And I asked him if he kind of remembered that. And he was like, I'm not really. And then when I told him, he says, yes, now I remember. I remember Mr. Sudo in that day and being my classmates and how we felt. Do any of you remember where you were when that happened? When the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded? I do wonder, like, the whole nostalgia of that day and what took place and how everybody was upset, was saddened. A school teacher was going into space, right? That was the angle that was much discussed and talked about at our school. I was at Franklin Middle School when that took place. 651-461-9226. I remember sitting there in that classroom with my classmates. We're watching the television and, you know, they wheel it in, they turn it on, and at that specific point, we're excited more than anything. Super excited. And this is what it sounded like with regards to the takeoff.
2-1, and liftoff. Liftoff of the 25th Space Shuttle mission, and it has cleared the tower.
Roger, roll, Challenger.
Good roll program confirmed. Challenger now heading downrange. Engines beginning throttling down now at 94%. Normal throttles for most of the flight, 104%. throttle down to 65% shortly. Engines at 65%, three engines running normally, three good fuel cells, three good APUs. Velocity 2,257 feet per second. Altitude 4.3 nautical miles, downrange distance 3 nautical miles. Engines throttling up, three engines now at 104%.
Challenger, go and throttle up.
Challenger, go and throttle up.
1 minute 15 seconds. Velocity 2,900 feet per second. Altitude 9 nautical miles. Downrange distance 7 nautical miles. Flight controllers here looking very carefully at the situation. Obviously a major malfunction. We have no downlink.
The sadness. Understanding as a young kid in a classroom something was wrong. And then after a few minutes, because I remember our teacher just turned the TV off. And it took a few minutes because I think there was confusion immediately, but then you understood what had just taken place and what you just saw. And that was the heartbreak that set in. Because remember now, it was a big deal. A school teacher is going up into space.
Oh, it was huge.
And so I remember watching that. I'm sure you remember it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was in Mr. Borchardt's social studies class. And like you, I think everybody had the cart with the big box TV on it. Like,
yeah, that was fun times.
Everybody had that. And we can't agree on a lot of things in life, but we can agree that when you saw that cart with the big box TV, you were going to have a good day. So we're watching it, and you see it. I didn't understand at that time because, kind of like Jason, I was 11. I'm watching this, and I'm like, okay, this is – something's wrong, but I didn't exactly know what. And then he turned it off and wheeled it out, and we were like, okay – and I don't think we talked about it. I think we went back into like regular classes because at that point, what are you going to tell a bunch of 10-year-olds about what they just saw? I mean, today we would have, you know, tried to work through our feelings. But back then, I think we were just like, well, that we're just going to pretend that didn't happen. Mm. And we just moved on.
Yep. Yep. 651-461-9226. What do you remember? Because I do find it interesting. Just kind of reminiscing and thinking about that, and literally calling my teacher today before we hop on the air to talk about this. And people are absolutely weighing in on the text line. Love to get a phone call or two. But also, we have another piece of historical acknowledgement that came across that day that we'll get to next year on the Lake Show. Won't forget it, January 28th, 1986, Space Shuttle Challenger exploded. Franklin Middle School, after it happened, trying to figure out what just happened. The television is taken out of the classroom. And at that point, you just kind of, like, you're understanding, yeah, things, that was not supposed to play out the way it played out. And I think those people may have died. 651-461-9226. Before we get to phone calls, before we get to text, where were you when all of that occurred? There's a statement that was put out later that evening by the 40th president of the United States of America. His name is Ronald Reagan. His reaction to the Challenger explosion.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd planned to speak to you tonight to report on the State of the Union. The events of earlier today have led me to change those plans. Today is a day for mourning and remembering. Nancy and I are pained to the core by the tragedy of the Shuttle Challenger. We know we share this pain with all of the people of our country. This is truly a national loss. 19 years ago, almost to the day, we lost three astronauts in a terrible accident on the ground. But we've never lost an astronaut in flight. We've never had a tragedy like this. And perhaps we've forgotten the courage it took for the crew of the shuttle. But they, the Challenger 7, were aware of the dangers, but overcame them and did their jobs brilliantly. We mourn seven heroes: Michael Smith, Dick Scobie, Judith Resnick, Ronald McNair, Ellison Onizuka, Gregory Jarvis, and Krista McAuliffe. We mourn their loss as a nation together.
That was Ronald Reagan, President Ronald Reagan, later that evening from the Oval Office. 651-461-9226. Jeff in Sauk Rapids, he wants to weigh in. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, Henry. I'm probably going to remember more than you got time for.
You probably remember a lot, man.
I'll try to make it quick. In 1959, I remember seeing Edward R. Murrow on TV smoking a cigarette, announcing the launch of the Soviet Sputnik. I was 7 years old at the time and got this crazy-ass idea that if I went outside and looked skyward, I could probably see it and hear the beeping that showed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
When Kennedy was assassinated, I was sitting in fifth grade English class.
Mm.
Rolled in two TVs, and the principal was going classroom to classroom saying what happened. When the space shuttle blew up, I was at Bristol Sports looking at snowmobiles.
Wait, you were where?
I came outside. Nope. Turned on the radio, and that was when they were just announcing the launch.
Wait, Jeff, say it again. Where were you at? You said you were where? Something sports?
Yeah, so, you know, the Bristol's was the name. It's a sports place. They have snowmobiles, motorcycles.
I got you. Okay.
I was looking at snowmobiles, and I came out and got in the truck, and it was just about the time that they were doing the live feed of the launch.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I'm going to sit here and listen to this. This is pretty cool.
It was so sad, man. It was so tragic. And thanks for the phone call from Jeff in Sauk Rapids. I still remember, even as a young kid, just not knowing for a couple minutes what I'm watching. And there was a part of me, as an adult on 9/11, when the first plane hit the tower, the first tower, I was like, hold on, what's, you know, because I kind of have a fear of flying, and I was like, well, something clearly has went amiss, whatever. But then when the second plane hit the other tower, I knew then what was going on. But I still remember as a young kid just being confused. But then when there wasn't a whole lot of conversation and our teacher wasn't really expounding on it, I knew something was bad. The text line. There was an excellent book written about this terrible accident, and it turned out that all of the passengers aboard were likely alive when it hit the water. Now, I haven't gotten confirmation of that, but there has been a lot of talk historically about people surviving the initial explosion and the breakup, because the pilot, Michael J. Smith, he had said, uh-oh, at the moment that the spacecraft exploded. And so some of the crew, apparently they did live long enough to turn on emergency air packs, according to NASA. Now, what else on the text line? I was in an art class, college at University of Minnesota, Mankato, just named Mankato State University. Then we had a TV room and was watching live. That from Brian and Hector. This from the 320. I was a Schwann's man standing in the front door of a house in Jackson, Mississippi when the shuttle blew up. I spent the next 2 hours standing in her living room watching all the news reports. Wow. Let's take a phone call from Sarah in Litchfield. How you doing, Sarah?
Hi. I was in St. Philip's School, a very small Catholic school, about 8 years old. And it was interesting, the year before we went to Disney World and Epcot Center, so I actually had a model of Challenger. Mm. I just liked the name of it, so that was crazy. But they had a multi-purpose room to put all of us students in, and then after that happened, we all went to our own rooms. The teachers had a meeting, and they came back to us and tried to explain things to us, so that was kind of nice. But the very interesting thing is 10 years down the road, my son, who is about 10, was at that same school when 9/11 happened.
Mm.
And even though they didn't witness it on TV, since it's such a family-focused
yep.
Catholic school, they did talk to the students before they were sent home.
So your teachers did get together collectively, and they came to your guys' back to classrooms and did try to explain it to you guys.
Yeah, because we watched it as a whole group.
Yep.
But they weren't talking to me as a second grader the same way they're probably talking to the fifth graders.
Let me ask you this, Sarah, because you said you were 8, and I think at that particular time I was 12. I don't know how you kind of took it in or how they pitched it or talked about it at your school, but at least for me, there was a sense of extra pride with that because of the teacher, Krista McCollum,
yes,
her being involved
definitely.
In it. They played that up at our school, and they did it at yours, I'm assuming.
Oh, definitely. In fact, you know, some of our teachers there, I think, were in the lottery for it. So, of course,
yeah,
that was just, everybody was excited and stoked about it. But I think it was really coincidental that decades later, when 9/11 happened, my son was in that same school, and even before the kids went home, they were aware of what happened.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the phone call from Sarah in Litchfield. Let's take a phone call from Jennifer in Fridley. You are on the Lake Show, Jennifer.
Hi. I'm Jennifer. I live in Fridley. I was in North Park Elementary, first grade class, and they joined several classrooms together, and they had been talking about it, and I didn't realize that that was happening that day because we weren't talking about it at home, but we got all together in a room and they pulled in that double-decker cart and we were all sitting on the floor watching it. And I believe that, I know they turned off the TV, but there was a couple of like hollers, like from the teachers in the back of the room, like, oh my gosh. And then they turned off the TV and carted it out. Mm. And didn't talk to us about what happened, and we didn't really realize. I was too young. I didn't really realize what had happened.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, thanks for the phone call from Jennifer and Fridley. And that reaction speaks volumes. Our teacher did not react that I can recall. I do remember, because we had a smart aleck kid in our class. He was kind of like the class clown, kind of the bully. And I remember some sort of smart, you know, comment that he made with regards to people dying or something. I can't remember the specific thing that he said.
But there was something
that got your attention. But there was, because that's just who he was. He was a smart aleck and, you know, always trying to be the class clown and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I remember that, them saying something, and I think that my teacher admonished the kid for saying whatever he said, but I think at that specific point it kind of set in what I was thinking, that yeah, something is just went wrong there.
Yeah, ours didn't. I don't think he responded either, because I don't think he wanted to
draw attention to it.
He didn't want to freak us out more than we already were trying to figure out how to process it.
Yep. Final phone call for Mike in Waseca. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, I'm doing good, Henry. Thanks for, first off, for bringing this up and allowing people to remember these space pioneers. Just great people, and they did a lot for us here to advance space in general.
Absolutely.
One thing I wanted to share with you that was a memory for me, I was 19 at the time, community college, walked through the commons, watched this take off. But for me, the thing that I remember, and I still remember to this day, that's haunted me, is at the time this went up, there was a lot of confusion. What just happened?
Mm-hmm.
Did it really happen? And then all of a sudden, they had a split screen where they showed the family. They showed the family when this happened. They showed the joy of the family when they took off, and they showed the confusion and the sorrow that took place afterwards. And to me, it's just something I can't forget.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much for the phone call. I truly do appreciate it. Mike and Waseca.
Dude, that just gave me chills. Like,
yes.
I've got goosebumps when
you
Mike
visibly
said,
you were like, whoa, what, you
yeah.
Know.
I mean, I legitimately, I've got goosebumps right now when Mike said that. I couldn't imagine being in that situation, being like, you know what? Here's a good idea. Let's pan over to the family when something awful just happened to get their reaction. I'm like,
I don't think that he didn't describe it in that way, that they panned to them, that there might have been like a camera already on them. That's the way that I kind of took what he just stated.
No, but you're showing the family after
well,
something.
Well, you said it was a split screen.
I know, but I mean, you've got to. I don't remember it because.
In that specific. Let me say this. If that is indeed the case, and I'm not saying that Mike and Wasika is making anything up, I guess my point with you would be people aren't understanding or knowing what's happening in real time. Right in that specific moment, I'm not going to automatically pivot and just blame CNN or whatever. I don't think that sometimes people just don't. The reaction is a little bit slower because they're trying to figure out like how all of this stuff is happening in real time. So that's the one part that I will say about that. I was watching the TV and couldn't believe what I had just seen. I couldn't quit watching the television. And there's a lot of different things that happen historically in our country. When you see it and you're confused, and then when you realize it, you can't turn away. You're fixated to the TV. 320 area code. I was in kindergarten. It was one of my off days. My grandpa made it a point to turn on the TV because it was going to be broadcast. We watched it go. First time I'd seen any adult be that visibly shaken over something they just watched. Before they it's kind of broken up here, our text line up, and then you started to see it explode. And something I remember to this day. He goes, "That's not good. That's not good."
And for the record, let me say, I don't think Mike's making anything up. I'm just I'm trying to imagine. Like the camera people, the director being.
If it's a split screen,
yeah.
What I'm saying is to you is that if there's an explosion or like when things go up with these shuttles or now even with what's the thing with Elon and it's coming back
SpaceX.
Like you don't know what's supposed to work and how it's supposed to look all the time, do you?
No, but okay. I mean, as soon as that happens, you pull it from the screen.
I'm not disputing that. But when it's a split screen, it's kind of hard to not capture the reaction of the people that are there. Final phone call. Let's go to Paige in St. Croix. What's up, Paige?
Hey, I was returning. I was working at a radio station in Minneapolis, and I had been at the St. Paul Civic Center setting up the auto show. And I got back, and the way the station was set up was it was this all-glass wall. And I walked in, and nobody was in the promotion director's office. Nobody was in the production studio. Mm. Nobody was in the on-air studio. Nobody was in the lobby. And it just seemed weird. And I walked in, and everybody was just gathered around in the GM's office watching TV, and nobody saying a word.
Yeah.
You couldn't.
You knew then something was not right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And these are people who just looked shocked.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally get it. Hey, thanks for the phone call. I truly do appreciate it. 651-461-9226. It's a day that we'll never forget, nor should we. A sad day, but you think about the people that we lost on that tragic day. All right, coming up next, we'll take a look at the local weather with Chief Meteorologist Chris Schaefer. And then hiding your sexuality, that makes you a bad person? A specific incident where I have to challenge the person that it involves. We get to that next year on the Lake Show. I want to call out and challenge David Cote, former Premier League referee who was fired. His contract was terminated by the Professional Game Match Officials Limited, following an investigation into his conduct. And he brings up some things to me with regards to his conduct and also his sexuality. Okay? This is a story that I saw in The Athletic, out of the New York Times, that I wanted to talk to you guys about. Now, he's a former Premier League soccer referee. He had made some derogatory comments about the former Liverpool manager. And then he has since come out publicly as being gay. And said that hiding his sexuality contributed to the behavior that led to his dismissal. Okay? All right, so a few things to note here. His contract was terminated on December the 9th, okay, following an investigation into his conduct. The 42-year-old was suspended by the refereeing body on November the 11th. Now, you say, what happened on November the 11th? A video emerged on social media in which he talked about the former manager of Liverpool as bleeping arrogant and a German expletive. Okay? That was published. Then the Sun published on November the 14th a separate video. Okay? Now we're to a second video in which it claimed to show him sniffing white powder through a rolled up American dollar. Okay? Now, he did an interview with The Sun, which was published yesterday. He said that he first came out as gay to his parents at the age of 21 and his friends at the age of 25. But the, quote, macho world of football contributed to his decision to keep his sexuality a secret. He also said that since his dismissal, he has been in an incredibly dark place. Now, let me give you some quotes, a few things that he said that I just have to, I look at all of this and I'm like, huh? I got to be missing something. He says, quote, "My sexuality isn't the only reason that led me to be in that position, but I'm not telling an authentic story if I don't say that I'm gay and that I've had real struggles dealing with hiding that. I hid my emotions as a young ref and I hid my sexuality as well. A good quality as a referee, but terrible quality as a human being. And that's led me to a whole course of behaviors." When they ask him about the snorting of the cocaine, he says, "It's not something I was reliant on day by day, week by week, month by month. I've had long periods where I've not used it, but it was one of the escape routes I had. Just getting away from the stresses, the relentlessness of the job, it fills me with a huge sense of shame to say that I took that route." This is what I would have to say to this former referee, David Cote. What does your sexuality have to do with being a bad person? I would say nothing. Now I'm not going to sit here and make light of him hiding him being a gay man. We know that there are people in this country and throughout the world that do not reveal their true authentic self because they feel there's going to be pushback, they're going to be discriminated against, they're going to be treated differently. They won't be able to rise up the ranks of getting into certain positions, jobs, they'll be treated differently. We know that. In society, that's just how it is in the world.
Yep.
This ain't an America thing. This is a world thing. But I'm sorry, sir. You being a gay man and having to, in your mind, having to hide your authentic self and in your true sexuality, that does not, in my opinion, mean that you are a terrible person to other people. You can be a gay man, were outwardly proud or privately proud, and be good to other people. It doesn't mean that you just treat people like trash and you get caught on video doing all of these things. To me, this is an excuse, and you're trying to explain your bad behavior based on your sexuality, and I'm not buying it.
You can't use your sexuality as a scapegoat here. Like, when you are calling a former manager effing arrogant and a German aunt, then you're filmed sniffing some white powder through a rolled up American banknote. Pretty sure it's not powdered sugar.
Cocaine has nothing. It's not a gay thing.
No, it's not. I mean, what you're doing is you are tanking your credibility and your reputation, and you are also compromising everybody else in that organization, in that job. Because if you are doing this and they're allowing you to keep your job while you're acting like this, I mean, are you going to have some sort of personal vendetta against Liverpool because of their ex-manager? Like, are you going to be so coked up that you can't do your job? I mean, do you have to pass a drug test? Like, all of this adds up to you're just a liability, and this, you know, they made the right decision to terminate you from your job. You can't act like that in any walk of, well, there's one thing you could do that, and, you know, and be fine in that position. But most jobs, you can't act like that and then be like, oh, well, yeah, it's because I was gay. It doesn't fly.
I just how he's trying to explain this is just kind of a weird thing to me.
He's not owning up to the fact that he made some mistakes.
And that's the reason why I'm challenging him and calling him out on it. In reaction on the text line, 651-461-9226 if you'd like. But this is not taking ownership. This is not being accountable for your actions. If you are gay, you know how to be a good human being.
Yes.
If you are black, white, whatever your race is, you know how to be a good human being. If you are a man or a woman, you know how to be a good human being.
Character has nothing to do with sexuality ethnicity or anything. Being a good person is a good person regardless. This is mind-numbing how people just feel like they can make all of these bad decisions and then play the victim. Well, I'm gay. That's why. Okay. Well.
Well, I think he's trying to insinuate that his sexuality
played a role
in terms of, like, he'd been suppressing so many things and he was under all this pressure. He was under all this stress and just, like, I'm sorry, man. I get it, man. There's pressure and stress that people deal with every single day.
Yeah.
But the thing that I won't allow you to do is when you exhibit bad behavior, you say that it's because of that. If there is, look, who has a lot on their plate every single day in this world because there's a lot of things that they have to deal with that you and I don't have to deal with? A lot of women,
mm-hmm.
right? Doesn't mean that women that we watch in sports, women that we see as doesn't mean that you are allowed to be just disrespectful to anybody that you encounter. I just don't. It's kind of a weird angle to me.
Yeah.
And look, you can find this story in The Athletic. You can also find it in The New York Times. I'm not sure that he's coming back from this.
No.
Like, he want, because look, he's.
If you can own it, he's
only 42. Like,
yeah.
There's going to have to be another job for him. And I'm not saying that he should never be allowed to work and be a referee again. That's not my point. But this is going to be something that's going to be kind of hard for him to bounce back, at least being a top-tier referee.
Just take ownership of the fact that, you know what, I screwed up. We've all made mistakes. We've all said things to people that we probably shouldn't have. We've all done it. I mean, maybe not snorting cocaine out of an American banknote or calling somebody an aunt, but, I mean, we've all done things and we're like, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that.
And this is
it's a bad feeling.
This is also probably part of trying to scapegoat this away,
mm-hmm.
is the second layer is that he is also the subject of a separate investigation. And you know what this is tied into? Alleged betting. Where it was alleged that he discussed issuing a yellow card with somebody before a match. Like, now you got other problems. So now, are you trying to utilize this as cover for all the stuff that's coming down the way for you?
Oof. You get
and allegedly, he says, I strongly refute those false and defamatory allegations.
You got 99 problems, but being gay ain't one.
This is
sad. Like, this is somebody who just, dude, you're 42. Own up. Admit you made a mistake. People are very forgiving in today's society.
Yes.
Maybe in England they're not, but I feel like if you can just say, hey, you know what? I was a jackass and I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I'm better because of it. And you move on. And guess what?
I've learned from my mistakes.
You can rehab that.
Yep. All right, 651-461-9226. One more segment in the opening hour of The Lake Show here on The Good Neighbor. A fun opening hour here on The Lake Show. Two more hours left. Want to finish with some of the text about the Challenger shuttle explosion on the text line, and actually one from my phone. Tom Hauser, political reporter, Channel 5. He's responding to Mike, who called in earlier from Waseca. He said the caller, Mike, was correct. They did show the family's reaction because Krista McAuliffe, the school teacher, was on board. It was several minutes before anybody had any idea what happened. They were not trying to be insensitive. They just didn't know what happened.
Hey, I'm a gay English football official with a gambling problem, okay? I misunderstood, okay? Why are you going to all of a sudden point out all of my deficiencies? Never mind. No, I...
Yeah, that one didn't go over as well.
Didn't go over. No. Listen, when it comes to that, like, my mind instantly goes... Again, remember, I was 10.
Good try, though.
And I didn't see... Well, okay, 100% of the shots, you know what I'm saying? So, I'm not, like, admonishing any of this. My mind is, like, I guess where we're at now, where if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah, but that was 19...
That was 1986.
Yeah, that's a different time.
And I understand that, but yeah. my mind right now just goes to that.
Mike did explain that it was a split screen. So if you're having a split screen, it's not like you're panning to these grieving families.
Yeah, and you're
like,
right.
That's not a thing.
You're right.
You know? Text line from the 612, holding my 5-year-old, or no, they come back, they say 5-month-old son watching the Challenger.
As a parent, I would wonder, okay, we're talking about it a lot. How do you explain that to your kids? Like, that's what you saw, because I don't have to explain 9/11 to my 14-year-old. I don't have to explain this. And now I feel like she's at the age where if something happens, she's going to be able to comprehend enough. But, I mean, man, if you're a parent and you've got a kid and you've got this tragedy, like, I wouldn't even know how to go about trying to explain this to your kids.
From the 612, my husband and I were on our way to Cape Canaveral from Daytona Beach and saw it from the highway. What? We really didn't know what we were seeing as the pieces were all breaking up, okay, because our text line breaks up.
Breaking up.
This is from the 952. I was on Zomba Beach in California for college J-term, heard on our boombox while playing beach volleyball. From the 763, Henry, I was 25 and in Milwaukee for work. My boss called and told me what happened. I had a crew of people working for me. I had to tell them about, I'm assuming about it, and get right back to work. I remember wanting to just take some time, but I couldn't. And then from the 612, public didn't know whether they survived what was happening. Cameras on the family were there to record the joy leading up to event. Not for morbid reaction. Yeah, that's just, I'm telling you, man, I called my teacher today.
You did?
Whose classroom I was in. I called Mr. Sudo and I said, Mr. Sudo, do you remember where we were 39 years ago?
Did he remember you?
Of course he remembers me. He had me in the phone. He's like, hey, Henry, how are you doing? Like, Mr. Sudo, you know? Why would he not remember me? Hey, do you think he would not remember if I have his cell phone number?
I got a lot of cell phone numbers I know.
How many of your ex-teachers do you have their numbers?
Maybe two.
Oh, you're lacking. I got more than two.
I'm lacking.
You are lacking. You're slacking.
You honestly think they want to associate success with this? Like, yeah, I didn't do a good job as an educator. Look at that guy now.
Speaking of education, one attribute of being a good administrator in education, somebody that works in a school, is being a good decision maker. Wait till you hear this story. Next.